So, Om Agnatim Ananda Shaganan Lakaya Chakshuna Minitam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Namahat. So, we're going to try to do it, make this a little interactive so that everyone stays awake, especially the children. What?
Can you take the kids upstairs?
All right.
So they can put the calendars and envelopes together. And adults can focus.
Oh, you're going to have the kids put the calendars together?
Yeah. And we will be there too, upstairs, so we'll supervise.
Okay.
It seems that there's any children that would want to stay.
Any children want to stay, they can stay. Because I'm trying to make it a little interesting for the children.
Yeah, it's good for them to do.
Anyway, so whoever wants to go and stuff calendars. It sounds exciting. And I'm sure there'll be some sweets for those who stuff calendars. Anybody wants sweets? And everybody go upstairs. Even the adults will go upstairs. So, okay, I should stay. He knows the Bhagavad Gita by heart, so. Getting back to the Bhagavad Gita. So, we're going to try to be a little interactive. Does anyone know how many years ago Bhagavad Gita was spoken? What? How about 120 million years? Yeah. So Bhagavad Gita, and actually, even before then, Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Like we talk about the Lord's pastimes being Nichalila. Nichalila means, let's say if you have Krishna's pastimes, Krishna appeared a little over 5,000 years ago, and he appears once in every day of Lord Brahma. How many years is that? Sahasra Yuga Paryanta. 1,000 ages. 1,000 times 4,300,000 years is the day. But actually, that's only the day. There's also the night. So twice that. So every so often, every day Krishna appears. And every day Lord Rama appears. And every day Lord Chaitanya appears. But you got to wait a long time if you're on the Earth planet. So anyway, the same thing with the Bhagavad Gita. It is an eternal work. The Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedic literatures, they're eternal. The knowledge contained in them is eternal. And of course, every time Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita, it may be phrased a little bit differently, but the knowledge is actually the same. The knowledge is perfect because it is coming down. It's aparashaya. It's not coming from a human being. And the statement of the Vedic literatures is dharmam tasakshat bhagavat pranitam. That if you want to understand dharma, then dharma can only come from Bhagavat. That's our method of understanding things. Because if I invent some knowledge, or about the absolute, not about computers, because he's an expert. Adidev is expert in coding. He's working in an old computer system, COBOL. I'm embarrassed even to know him because he's working. So anyway, even I'm more advanced than that. As far as spiritual matters, you have to hear from the perfect source. Because the other methods of understanding knowledge, such as induction, in other words, examining all different examples of a particular thing, they're faulty. And every method, or history, or hearing from some imperfect source. So our method of receiving knowledge is called Shabda Pramana, the evidence by hearing from Krishna. So sometimes, I'll tell you an interesting story about the Gita. There was once a Brahmin who had some doubts in the knowledge presented in the Gita. And this Brahmin was doing what a Brahmin normally does. For those of you who are Brahmins, don't get scared. He was living by begging. Didn't have a job. Generally, in the traditional Vedic system, the Brahmanas didn't go to work and do computer work every day. But they would yajan, patan, pantan, dana, pratigraha. They would make their living by accepting charity, and also they would give charity, they would teach, They would go to school. Dhanapratigraha. I mean, these are injunctions in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, so this Brahmin, he would make a living by begging. He would go and go, Bhiksha, Bhiksha. That's why sannyasis have a cloth like this, so they can beg. Sometimes I go to the holy places and people ask me for a donation, and to stop them, I just go like this. And then they run away. So this Brahmin, trying to give a little humor. So this Brahmin, he was living by begging. And so he read this one verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janak payupasite tesham netibyuknam yogachema vahamiham. That basically where Krishna says, for those who are devoted to me, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. And so the Brahmin thought, it's not really true, because I'm having to beg myself. And Krishna's not providing anything for me. It's by my effort. I mean, maybe Krishna's giving intelligence, like he says in the 15th chapter of the Gita. But actually, it's me who does the work. So he was thinking, this is not a bona fide edition of the Gita, so he took his pen and he scratched out that particular verse of the Gita. Not a good idea. So he scratched out the verse, and then he went to go begging. So he's out begging all day long. Nobody would even give him the time of the day. Would give him anything. And he's just wondering, what's happening here? What's happening? In the meantime, a young, very attractive boy comes to visit his home and talks to his wife. And this young boy is bringing a lot of ingredients, like kheer, not even an ingredient, but milk, so he can make kheer, vegetables, club jamuns, pizza, you know, whatever the little boy was bringing. You know, I'm putting it in modern terms, you know. So he was bringing so many things that normally this Brahmin would beg for, and he gave it to the Brahmin's wife. And this boy was bleeding, and he was scratched up and bleeding, and especially on his back. And this Brahmin's wife said, you know, who are you, and why are you bleeding like that? And the boy said, I am a disciple of your husband. And the wife said, my husband doesn't have any disciples. What's happening here? And the boy said, your husband beat me. He kept beating me over and over again. That's why I'm bleeding. And she was so upset with her husband. She said, oh, please sit down, little boy. Of course, the little boy was very attractive, too, because everybody knows who he was. So please sit down, little boy, and take some prasad. So the little boy sat down. He was fed prasad and everything like that. And then he went away and left all these different ingredients there. The husband came back. And immediately the wife started yelling at him. That's okay. Even in the Vedic system, the wives can yell at the husband. Perfectly all right. What? It's authorized. So she was yelling at him, how could you do this to your disciple? You beat your disciple, and he was so good. He went out begging, and he got so many things for you. And the husband said, what are you talking about, lady? I don't have any disciples. I don't beat people. And she said, yes. And she began to describe what this little boy looked like. And I guess he had a little flute tucked into his Dodi. And then he went to his Bhagavad Gita, and he found that that particular verse had been not, the scratching he had put on it had been taken off. So the moral of the story is, everything Krishna says is true in the Gita. We have no doubt about it. And of course Krishna does say in the Bhagavad Gita, Shradana Purusha Dharma Shasha Parantapa Apraprayamam Nivartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. He says those who don't have faith in that, guess what? What happens? They return to what? birth and death in the material world. So everything is based upon faith, you know, trusting Krishna's words. If you trust Krishna's words, there's another verse, oh, this is from the Bhagavatam. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru tasya ite gatita yarta prakashante mahatmana. One who has faith in, of course, the Vedic literatures, this is Krishna, and the spiritual master, then everything is automatically revealed to him. In other words, through the heart. As Krishna says in the 10th chapter of the Gita, Dadami buddhi yogantam yanamam apyantite tesham satyuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogantam yanamam apyantite. That if you actually devote yourself to Krishna, and of course devoting yourself to Krishna doesn't mean simply going to the temple and doing a little puja or asking Krishna for something, but it means devoting, devotional service. So in that light, I'm going to describe the different topics in the Bhagavad Gita, just to give a brief introduction. And when I'm finished, we're going to leave it open for questions so you can all ask questions. Of course, Bhagavad Gita, is generally defined as having five different topics. But before I describe those five topics, I'd like to talk about the three categories those five topics fit into. Three categories are what we call sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So sambandha basically means relationships, knowing different relationships between, it's knowledge, knowing relationships between Krishna, the living entity, the different five topics in the Gita. Time, karma, and material energy. Those are the five topics. How they relate to each other. I mean, for example, how does the material energy relate to us? Are we material, or are we spiritual? Or what are we? Of course, elsewhere it's described, Vishnu Shakti para Vrakta, Jeja Vrakyatata para Vidyakarma Samganya Tritira Shakti Ishate, that we are spiritual, but we're marginal. And we can go either way. We can connect. Our connection with this material energy is based on illusion. In other words, I don't know if any of you have seen this movie some time ago. It was called The Matrix. Some of you have seen it? It's like when the people were living in a, what we call a virtual world. And they really tasted things. They really had loving, no, not so loving, but anyway, they had exchanges with each other. And some people preferred to live in that world, even though they knew about the real world outside. And now we see the same thing happening with the development of modern technology, isn't it? That some people prefer, like if you go anywhere, they're living in their mobile phones, basically. No. I was just at the, driver's license place. And I still drive. So, but I had to upgrade my license to something that would be accepted by, Homeland Security. You have to do that with your license. You know that? You have to get this little star on the right-hand side of your license or else you're not going to be able to fly. Anyway, I was sitting there and everybody is just like absorbed in their virtual world. Me too. But anyway, well, I was reading the Bhagavad Gita. I have to be honest. I wasn't playing games. So, in the same way, people in this world are absorbed in this virtual reality because the soul never really can contact matter. It's of a different nature. So we are thinking. I am thinking that I'm sitting down here. I'm thinking I am sitting down. But it's just yantra rudani maya. It's just a machine, this body that's sitting down, and I'm identifying with this body. So that's the connection. That's a sambandha. The relationship. So my relationship, actually we can go through each of the five topics talking about Sambandhavidaya Prayojana, which is interesting. So, and then you talk about what's my relationship with Krishna? What's the Sambandha with Krishna? Krishna describes in the Gita what? Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Of course, unfortunately, now, Manashakshtani Indriyani Prakatishtani Karshati, I'm struggling with the material energy, thinking myself the energy. So actually, in that verse, you have the Sambandha with Krishna and the Sambandha with the material energy at the same time. So what is our relationship with Krishna? We're part and parcel of Krishna. We're meant to serve. We're like the arm that's, or the hand, to use a better example, that's meant to serve the body. And the typical example Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, gives is that if the hand has some food and it tries to enjoy independently, guess what? You end up with a big mess. Squeezing, you know, like sometimes kids, they play with food. You ever do that? Mother says, don't you understand? You're not supposed to play with your dinner. You're supposed to put it in your mouth. So in this material world, we're playing with our dinner. How about that? Playing, you know, we're just like squeezing, but actually the hand can really be served best if the hand puts the food in the mouth. So our relationship with Krishna is that we're part and parcel of Krishna, meant to serve Krishna, jivera svarupahai, nitya Krishna das. So that's the relationship with Krishna. And what is our relationship with time? Well, we're experiencing the devastating effects of time. Mrityu sarva harascham, as Krishna says, time is like all pervading death. Krishna says, kalo asmi, I am time. So many of us, I mean, I'm experiencing time all the time. I just look in the mirror and there's an old person looking back at you. Many years ago when I started New Goloka, 1982, I was a young man, right? So that's my relationship with time, because I'm identifying with matter, time is affecting me. And it's causing everything to disintegrate. That's called entropy. So we got time, living entities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material energy. So that's Sambandha, the relationship of all these different elements. Let's see, and karma, I forgot about karma. That's the final one. What's my relationship with karma, or all of our relationship with karma? If we're not Krishna conscious, everyone is suffering from karma in different ways. What is it? How do we suffer from karma? Not only do we suffer a reaction for what we do, but the karma that we get forces us to do other things in the future. For example, let me explain what I mean. So let's say I have an inclination to do something. That's called a kuta. And then after there's a bija, a desire to do it. And then I do it. Let's say, I mean, not me, obviously, because I've never done this. But let's say drinking alcohol. I'm not going to ask who drinks alcohol here. So let's say drinking alcohol. So theoretically, I would drink alcohol. And that's sinful. And I get a reaction for it. The reaction for that, of course, is mentioned in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You get to drink malted lead after you leave your body, right? Unfortunately. But besides that reaction, the inclination to do more of that. It's like a vicious chain, the karma. It goes in a circle, like kuta, bija, aparabdha, parabdha, and then kuta and bija again. In other words, that's our relationship with karma in this material world. So, that's Sambandha. What is that Gita teaches that. What is our relationship with life? And then, after that is Sambandha Abhideya. What do you do about it? Because all these different relationships we're experiencing in the material world are causing us suffering. Krishna says in the Gita, Dukalayam Ashashvatam. This material world is temporary and miserable. And he also says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punavartino Arjuna Mamu Pecha Dukontiya Puna Janmana Pichate. Wherever you go, you're going to be miserable. He says, of course, he says from the higher planets, highest planet, Lord Brahma's planet, to the lowest planet, or middle planet. But Mamu Pechu Dukantiya Puna Janmana Vidyate. One who actually goes to Krishna doesn't have to take birth again. It doesn't have to suffer. So our suffering is due to our attachment to matter, our attachment to karma, our attachment, I guess, even to time, attachment to the material world. And so the idea is to get out of that attachment. And to get out of that attachment, you can't. It's impossible. Because the more you try to get out of something you're attached to, the more you get attached to it. It's like that little trick. I don't know if any of you remember this. You put your finger in something and you try to pull it out, and it holds on to your finger more and more. Some of you may experience that as a kid. So the more you try to get, not think of something or not be attached to something, the more you get attached to that very same thing. It's impossible. In fact, the material world is described by Krishna in the 15th chapter as a banyan tree. Now, the interesting thing about banyan tree is you can't tell where the roots are, where the branches are, and both the roots are the branches and the branches are the roots. And this material world that Krishna describes in the 15th chapter is an upside-down banyan tree, because the material realm is a reflection of the spiritual realm. So, basically, you can't get out. It's like, another example I can give from my own experience is like a funhouse mirror. Anyone seen a funhouse mirror before? When I was young, my mother brought me to some amusement park. And in this amusement park, there was this hall of mirrors. Anyone's been in anything like this before?
Maze.
A maze. It's like a maze with mirrors, but you can't really tell which is the path, which is not the path. And so I was, you know, I was only three. I had an excuse. So my mother put me in the middle. She said, have fun, my little boy. And I kept running into the walls, and I finally sat down and started crying. And so she had to lead me out. So this world is like that, too. It's the banyan tree, which is so complicated. It's upside down. No one can tell where the roots begin, the branches begin. This is from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And, of course, Krishna does tell us how to get back in the 15th, out in the 15th chapter. What does he say? He says, nirmana. Anyone know that verse? Nirmana moha? Anyone know that verse? Chittasanga dosha. Avyatma nitya vinivirta kama sukaduka samgya gachanchimuda paramavyam tat. And I'll translate that for those of you who don't understand Sanskrit. Nir manamoha. You have to free yourself from illusion, false prestige, nir manamoha, jitta sangha dosha. Give up bad association. What does that bad association mean? According to Krishna, karanam guna sangasya. This is another point, the modes of nature, which is part of the topic of the material energy. That we are all associated with these three modes of material nature. What is it? Goodness, passion, and ignorance. Sattva, raja, tama. And so everything in this world is like covered with the wet paint of these modes of nature. Right? So if this was wet paint, I'd touch it and I would have, I guess, some brown color come off of my hand. So the modes of nature are like that. So that's guna sangha. Krishna describes in the Gita how every type of food has a mode of nature attached to it. There's foods in the mode of goodness. What are those foods? Does anyone know?
Fatty.
Not too fatty, but you know, they give you flesh. Yeah. What?
Fresh
foods. Like that, organic. So, Krishna doesn't say that. And then food in the mode of passion is what?
Salty, too sour.
Spicy, too hot, spicy. And it can cause disease, like ulcers or something. And food in the mode of ignorance is? Three out. Putrid, stale, decomposed. So, I mean, I can give you an example of different foods in different modes. I mean, for example, in the mode of ignorance, it's obviously meat, fish, eggs, things like that. And mode of passion would be like too much chilies. Too many chilies. Actually, chilies originally didn't come from India. Did you know that? They're originally from South America. And they were brought to India. So, they're not indigenous to India. I like chilies too. But not too much. So, and then food in the mode of goodness would be like milk and some moderate amount of sugar, vegetables, fruits, something that makes you healthy. Just like today, I was also with the doctor, and there was a question on an iPad you had to answer. Is your food healthy, not so healthy, or terrible? Because I picked healthy, because I eat healthy. But anyway, so it's interesting, you know, who's going to say your food is like killing me, killing me terrible? So anyway, the modes of nature are all pervading. Karnam gunasangasya sarasajama jonesu. And so one becomes entangled. So the Gita Sangha, going back to that verse in the 15th chapter, Gita Sangha dosha, giving up bad association. You know, there's good music, music in different modes, people in different modes, movies in different modes. I'm not going to tell you which movies are in what modes. But anyway, so Jita Sangha Dosha Avyatma Nitya Vinivritta Kama, and giving up lust, giving up duality, dvandvar, vimuktan, like happiness and distress, sukha dukkha samgag, gachancha buddha, paramabhyam tat. Someone who is not bewildered can transcend this material world. So again, there's all this negative stuff, giving up this, giving up that, giving up that. And I said before, if you remember, you can't do it. How do you give up all those things? And Krishna describes in the Gita how to do that. What does he say? Rasa vajram rasya pirsa param tushta nivartate. If you do something positive, because if I tell any of you to give up anything, you get more attached to it. Or if I tell you not to think of something, if I say, don't think of a pink elephant with blue ears. Do not think of a pink elephant with blue ears. Don't think of a pink elephant. Immediately the picture comes to your mind and said, I'm not going to listen to this guy. So, because all of us are like children. If you tell children not to do something, it becomes much more attractive, right? Like when I was young, my mother said, don't go into this room because this has all my antique furniture in it. As soon as she left the house, I was there on the trampoline, you know, balancing and bouncing on the antique furniture. Because it was much more fun to do something you're not allowed to do. Isn't it? To make it interesting. Just like sometimes in some countries they ban a book or ban a movie or something like that. Everybody wants to see it becomes much more popular. So the same thing works psychologically with us. That if you try to do something negative, you can't do it. You try to not think about something. Jai. Kornatai. Kornatai. Ki jai. Got a lot of Gopal there, too. So, you can't really do it. So you have to do something positive. And that's part of the Abhideya process. Abhideya means to do bhakti. So bhakti is the ninefold process of devotional service, especially, as Krishna says in the Gita, what satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantas cha. Anyone know the rest of that? What's the rest of it? Nas cha. Dhanavata. Tas jamam bhakcha. Nichi yuktupasate. So Krishna tells us actually how to get out of this. He says, machata madgata prana. body and that you should be discussing and hearing Krishna Katha. And then Tushanti Cha Ramanti Cha. What does that mean? Happiness and what else? Tushti. Tushti doesn't mean happiness. It means satisfaction. Tushti, Ramanti. So one becomes satisfied, because without peace, without satisfaction, right? How can one be happy? When your mind is all agitated and disturbed, you can't be happy. So that's a prerequisite. It's called a prerequisite for happiness. So machata, madgata, prana. So that's the process of bhakti that Krishna recommends. Incidentally, the process of bhakti or bhakti yoga or devotional service is recommended by Krishna in 330 verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Because in one particular point, actually, I don't know if I have the list here. Oh yes, I do have the list. I thought it'd be interesting. 322 verses in Bhagavad Gita talk about devotional service, Abhideya. Wow. That's the biggest topic. Time is the smallest topic. There's only like 3 or 4 verses about time. So this Abhideya, devotional service, is what we're teaching in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And it involves what we call Nava Bhakti. That means 9 processes of Bhakti Yoga. And if you do any of them, you can achieve perfection. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, offering everything to the Supreme Personality, becoming the friend, serving the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality, God. Anyway, so these processes are taught by Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam to his schoolmates, actually. So that's Abhideya. And then finally, the final topic discussed in the Bhagavad Gita is something we call Prayojana. And Prayojana means the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. Krishna talks a little bit about Prayojana in Bhagavad Gita. Not a tremendous amount of verses. Some verses, of course, Yad Gatva, Nani Bhartan, Te Tadama, Parama Mama. One who goes there never has to come back again to this material world. Another verse, Nitad Basyate Suryo, Nashashanko, Navavaka, Yadgatva, Narivartan Te, Tadama, Parama Mama, where Krishna says there's no sunlight, moonlight, or iPhones, and one who goes there. I always add a little just to make sure everyone's awake. It's actually interesting, he says electricity, but, you know, obviously, there was no electricity over 500 years ago, but like lightning and things like that in the Prabhaka. One who goes there and never comes back. So, Krishna hints at that. The Bhagavad Gita, he hints at that Prayojana. So these are the 3 topics discussed by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, and these topics are eternal topics. Now why would Krishna have to tell these topics to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita? That's another question. Well, the reason is, not simply because Arjuna was refusing to fight. Arjuna was taking our part because he knew better. However, he, under the influence of what we call Yogamaya, was taking our part so that Krishna could explain the Bhagavad Gita so we could hear for our benefit. That's why Arjuna asked to see the universal form in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. For our benefit, so we could understand who is God, what God would have to display, what a person would have to be display if he was God. So this is all done for our benefit. Anyway, so those are the 5 topics of the Bhagavad Gita, and one particular section of the Bhagavad Gita I wanted to talk about that's very important, because there's many times a misunderstanding about whether Krishna is personal or impersonal. As some people comment on the Bhagavad Gita, for example, there was one famous commentator on the Bhagavad Gita who commented on the famous verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, where Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, to worship me, thus you will come to me. And one famous commentator said, it's not to the person, Krishna, you have to surrender, but to the unborn beginningless within Krishna. That's kind of foolish, because Krishna is using a personal pronoun in that verse over and over and over again. Manmana bhavamat bhakti umat yashi mam namaskuru. Mam, 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 mam. It would just like be if I say, you know, bring me some water. I would like some water. I'm thirsty. And you say it's not to you that I got to bring water. It's to the thought. It's to the whatever, your energy. It's kind of foolish. So it's important to clear up that misunderstanding. And there's many verses in the Bhagavad Gita that do clear up that misunderstanding, in addition to Manmana Bhavamat Bhakto, where in the 12th chapter, and this is what I want to make reference to, Krishna is asked by Arjuna in the beginning of the 12th chapter, which is considered to be better or higher. You know, the those who worship you know, the personal, or those who worship the unmanifested, beginningless. And Krishna very explicitly answers that question. He says, those who worship me, or worship the personal aspect of the Lord, are considered to be better. Wow. Or higher. And he also says, those who worship the impersonal aspect, basically, eventually they come to worship the personal aspect. I'll tell you a story in that regard. There's actually several stories. One story is the four Kumaras, the Chatushana, the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras were young boys, actually 5 years old. How old are you?
Seven.
They were younger than you. But they were child prodigies. Anyway, so they, at one particular juncture, they were asked by their father, Lord Brahma, to get married, and the four Kumaras said, no. You know the story? You know the story. So just say no. So so they were asked by their father. Just like you see, I mean, sometimes in the families, the parents put a lot of pressure on the kids to get married. I have one friend, and he's not one of the four Kumaras, but one of the friends in India. Every time I go there, his mother and his sisters come to me, and they're crying. It's Praneshra. You remember Praneshra?
Yeah.
They're crying. They touch my feet, and they said, oh, please, we're suffering. I said, how can I relieve your suffering? Get him married. Find him a wife. So, you know, even with Lord Brahma, there's that problem, too, with his children. So he tells the Kumaras, I guess they were pretty young, 5 years old, you should get married. They refuse. And basically, the reason they refuse is because they didn't want to get entangled in this world. And Lord Brahma gets angry, and there's the whole story that Lord Shiva comes out of his forehead, and creates a little bit of a problem at that point. But that's not the purpose of my telling the story. The purpose of my telling the story is the four Kumaras were Brahmavadis. They were absorbed in the impersonal aspect. Now, they weren't Mayavadis. There's a difference. Mayavadi is someone who says that God's body and personality are temporary, or just temporary manifestations of the Brahman. That's called a Mayavadi, one who says that God's body, one's personality, is a temporary manifestation. And of course, Krishna in the Gita decries that. Avijananti Mahamudha, Avijananti. Like he said, Mudha, they're Mudhas, he says. They're asses, people, things like that. So the four Kumaras, they were not Mayavadis, they were Brahmavadis. It's more or less like, agnostics as compared to atheists. An atheist says there's no God. An agnostic says, I don't know. Prove it. So the four Kumaras were like that. They were absorbed in Brahman, and once upon a time, they went to the spiritual world to see Lord Narayan. And as soon as they smelled the lotus flowers and the tulsi leaves offered to Lord Narayan, what happened? They got attracted, and they lost their understanding, or they overcame their understanding that the Absolute was impersonal. And they became devotees of the Supreme Personality of God. That proves that the personal is higher than the impersonal, just that story itself. And of course, there's other stories. For example, Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami, before he was born, of course, he was the son of Vyasadeva, he refused to come out of his mother's womb. What? Yeah, 14 to 16 years. I mean, quite a pregnancy. Fortunately, at that time, the doctors didn't have ultrasound or something. So, why did he refuse to come out? Because he was afraid that when I come out, everything, you know, people are going to pay so much attention to me, I'll actually fall into Maya. It is a fact. Actually, usually when kids come out, parents pick them up and say, isn't he cute? He has your nose, he has your ears, he has your toes, he has your feet, you know, whatever. You ever seen that with kids? And then they bring the kid over to me. My dear Swamiji, can you hold my baby? So I can take a selfie with the kid, you know. They do it all the time. That's one of the duties of a sannyasi, to hold babies and bless babies. I'm not making that up. You can go on my Facebook page and see me with babies. So the child gets so much attention that he falls into Maya. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one acharya, a great acharya, the spiritual master of Gurkha, Babaji Maharaj is the spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. He has an interesting poem, and he talks about how in the womb the child is suffering, you know, due to this, you know, the worms or whatever is there. And he says, well, if I come out, let me out, I'll be your devotee. And then he says that when, as soon as the child gets out, guess what? He says, this is the life. You know, can you imagine, every time you cry, someone comes running to feed you. Doesn't work for me anymore. I gotta feed myself. So Shukadeva Goswami was similarly worried that when he came out, you know, that would be all over. He'd just fall into Maya and he wouldn't be absorbed in Brahman anymore. So what happened is he heard Bhagavatam. And when he heard Bhagavatam, he came out, and instead of staying home, you know, you'd think, you know, comes out, thanks Dad for teaching me about Bhagavatam. He ran away. Because he didn't want to get entangled. I mean, obviously his parents were waiting for him for 16 years, you know. You're really going to have a nice birthday party at that point. So he just ran away to preach. Didn't even take time to put clothes on. You know, completely naked. And he ran away to preach to Maharaj Parikshit, who was getting ready to leave this world due to being cursed by the snake bird. So his father was running behind him, shouting, oh my son, oh my son. And it's described only the trees and the mountains echoed his plaintive cry, Hare Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami, in order to pacify his father, used his mystic powers to create a duplicate, a clone. Did you know that? Never heard that story before. Anyone heard that story before? Krishna Priya's heard that story. He created a little clone of himself. So, you know, got to get rid of Dad. Then he sent that clone back with his father, and Vyasadeva was satisfied. Never heard the story. No one's heard that story. Interesting. It's interesting, isn't it? So cloning was there in the Vedic culture. It's not something new. So, and then he went to preach Krishna consciousness and exhibited his pastime of being a great pure devotee. So, this is proof that the personal is superior to the impersonal, because there's a verse in the Bhagavatam. Atmaramas chana nigrantopi urukume kurvanti hoi tuki bhakti yatam bhuta gunahari. Anyone's heard that verse before? That's called the Atmarama verse. That even those who are self-satisfied in Brahman, then if they hear about Krishna's qualities, then they actually give that up. Except if they're offenders. If they're Mayavadis, then they've committed an offense. Because it's an offense to say about Krishna that ultimately he has no arms, no legs, no eyes. I mean, if I say that about anybody, it's an insult. If I say, you're deaf, you're dumb, you're blind. You say, ooh, your parents would kill me if I said that. So, anyway, so the Mayavadis are offenders against Krishna. So, just a few final words. So why would someone become a Mayavadi? We understand, we're empathic. It's because the material world is so much suffering. So you think that there's so much suffering in this world, that suffering is caused by individuality and relationships, right? You're thinking, so negate it all. No relationships, no individuality, nirvana. And that's what impersonalists or Mayavadis think. But as Krishna describes in the 15th chapter of the Gita, there is a positive spiritual world. And we were talking about this before. This material world, in spite of being a banyan tree, is a reflection of a banyan tree. That's the metaphor Krishna uses. And everything that we have here is there in the spiritual world too. In other words, there are relationships, there are people, there are friends, there are husbands, there are wives, there's playing, there's sports. Maybe not rugby or soccer, but something. There is fun. And it's all what? Satchitananda. It's all full of bliss, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So it's not just a negation of this world, as frustrated people may think, or as philosophers may think. But Krishna presents in the Gita, it's a positive spiritual experience. So, anyway, that's... Wow, I went on for 45 minutes. I want to give time for questions about the Gita because we are commemorating or celebrating Gita Jayanti, the appearance of the Gita, which occurred over 5,000 years ago and also 120 million years ago and also the previous day of Lord Brahma. And it's an eternal scripture, like Krishna's pastimes are eternal. So remember what I said? There's three... category sambandha abhideyam prayojana, understanding the relationship between the different topics described in the Gita, abhideya, what to do about it, which is bhakti yoga, which is Krishna, as I said before, 320 verses in the Gita talks about bhakti yoga, devotional service, which is part of that is karma yoga, you're serving Krishna by giving him the fruits of activities, yat karosi yad ashnasi, yajahoshi dadasi yat, yat tapasya shikantiya, tat kurusu abhmanarpanam. And finally, what is the goal? Yad gatva nivartante tadama paramam mama. Going back to the spiritual world with Krishna. So that's really the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So, anyone have any questions? Because I was asked to leave time open for questions. Yes, Rishikesh.
Krishna says in all the chapters of Prabhupada.
He says what?
The Lord says, you know, if a person is attracted to a deity,
he makes his faith strong.
Yeah, he makes his faith strong. But that is against his interest. I mean, his devotee's interest. So why does the Lord...
Okay, very interesting question. Actually, let's talk about... the 17th chapter of the Gita in regard to your question. Arjuna asked the question, if one doesn't follow scripture, is he in ignorance, is his faith or is his religion in ignorance, passion, or goodness? And then he answers, according to the nature of the person, I'm just paraphrasing here, his faith is ignorant. So an ignorant person will develop faith in the mode of ignorance. You know, people in the mode of ignorance worship the ghosts and spirits. You see this in India sometimes. And also, a country I spend a lot of time in is Fiji. And there's many witch doctors. Even devotees sometimes they go to the witch doctor if they have some disease or problem. I tell them, just chant Hare Krishna gets rid of the ghosts and spirits. So they worship the ghosts and spirits in mode of, you know, passion. They worship the demons. Demons means like the politicians. I won't name any right now. Not all politicians. There's some really good politicians. I mean, I like a lot of the politicians in India. You know, the chief minister in UP, I like him a lot. But in America, I think we understand who is who. So you actually see people in the mode of passion, they worship demons, politicians. You know, you go to any of these conventions in America, you know, the Republican or Democrat conventions, like, oh my God, what are they worshiping? If they chanted Hare Krishna so enthusiastically, they'd be pure devotees by now. And in the mode of goodness, then, of course, the demigods. So Krishna makes people's faith strong according to the modes they're in. Now, why, your question is, why? Because it's against the living entity's self-interest. And what is the living entity? Vitu Swartagatimni Vishnu. Rasya Yeva Hirata Manina. Why is that? Because it's something called free will. Free will is an important topic that, a theological topic, that the living entity is here in the material world because he chose Krishna Bhadhyamukha, chose to turn his face away from Krishna. And so Krishna is facilitating. Another verse in Bhagavad Gita, of course, comes to mind. Yayatamam prapajante tamsataiva bhajamaham mamavartmanavartante manushapartha sarvasham. That in this verse, Krishna states that everyone, basically, I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit differently than the translation. I'm reciprocating with everyone according to how they reciprocate with me. I'm giving more of a direct translation in this regard. So, because of someone's desire, Krishna gives them the independence to try to explore the fruits of that desire so that they can ultimately understand and ultimately voluntarily come to Krishna. Because without giving that independence, then the person is a machine. Like my computer has no independence, although it appears to be sometimes. Actually, I had a very funny story. I have this device in my house. It's called Google Home Mini. Anyone's heard of this before? It appears to be independent. You know, I just tell it, what's the time? And it says, it's 3:30 in the morning. It's too early. It doesn't say that, obviously. But it's not independent. It's just programmed. You know, people talk about what's artificial intelligence? How you're going to be able to, you know, have a living entity living in a computer? It won't happen. Because it's not independent. It's programmed to act in a certain way. It's not a living entity. Anybody who knows about computer programming really knows. I mean, you can emulate a person. Yeah, certainly you can emulate. And my device certainly emulates it. You know, I just say goodnight to it. It says goodnight, sleep tight. So, it does. And I say tell a joke. It tells a joke. But anyway, so it appears to have independence, but it's just the machine. You know about this?
Yeah, my niece has one.
Yeah.
Says a joke?
Tell good jokes?
Yeah, tells jokes too. No, really bad jokes. So, it's a machine. And the body's a machine. And so we're not machines. We have free will, and a machine cannot love. A machine cannot love. It cannot reciprocate. What does love mean? To reciprocate. To reciprocate, to try to serve and please someone. And actually, you know, from the heart. Everybody knows what love is. I mean, how can you describe what it is? It's not. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. A machine can't feel that. So in order to have love, one has to have the ability not to love. So it has to be free will. So Krishna gives us that free will, and that's part of his mercy, to experience things. And then when we've experienced it, then out of our free will, we will turn back to Krishna. But it may come, bahunam janmanamante gyanavamam prabhajate vasudevam sarvamiti samahatma sarulabha. It may come after many, many thousands of births. But some people are more intelligent. More intelligent people learn by what?
Hearing.
Less intelligent people learn by doing. So it's better to be more intelligent. When Krishna says, Dukalaya Mashastratam, I accept it. That's called Shastra Chakshush. I mean, seen through the eyes of Shastra or scripture. I don't have to try out everything. You know, someone will say to me, why don't you go to Disney World? I did go. Anyways, I told you about that. It was a Krishna conscious purpose to it. But let's say if there wasn't a Krishna conscious purpose, or if I didn't go with a great devotee, then I'll just accept Krishna's words. Like that. So for example, I mean, a real story is when I travel a lot around the world, and there's all these sightseeing things. I go to Sydney, for example, Sydney, Australia, and the buddies say, would you like to go see the opera house? Would you like to go to see go bungee jumping? You know what bungee jumping is? And I say, no, there's no happiness in it, even though I've never done it. Because I accept Krishna's words. Or I could try it and experience it. So Krishna gives us that ability. That's free will. So does that answer your question? Any other questions? Bhagavad Gita? Yes.
So Gurudev, in the ninth chapter, also Krishna says about the Manmanabhava Madhbhakta verse, right?
Yeah.
Again in 18
too. That's nice.
So, what, I mean, well, there are two different...
Two different verses. The last two, yeah, lines are different.
Why so much significance, and what is the difference between the first verse and the last verse?
Well, the significance is we have to hear it over and over again.
So it's the only verse that is twice, right, Gurudev? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's the only verse that where you have the same... First part, twice, yeah. Significance is we have to hear it. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyasi manamskaru. Mami vashu si satam te. Pratijina priyosi me. Yeah.
So you have to hear it again and again?
Yeah. Why not? And actually, the whole Bhagavad Gita is summarized in what's called the four nutshell verses. That's 10th chapter, 8, 9, 10, 11. So the whole Bhagavad Gita is explained in those verses, and the rest is like an expansion from those four verses. Okay, any other questions about Gita? Gita or the philosophy of Krishna consciousness? Yes?
Compared to the Vedas, the Gita, I think initially the Gita was only spoken and like, you know, just passed over, just in, like somebody spoke and then others.
Somebody?
I mean, after Krishna spoke. Like it was passed on just by like somebody speaking and others hearing, not like in the written form. And I'm not sure, but I think like the Vedas before Gita came into the written form. And I'm just not understanding the importance.
Let me explain. Originally, the Vedas, you're talking about the four Vedas. Yajurveda, Atharva.
Initially, it was one.
Sama. Yeah. Originally, there was one Veda, and it was expanded into four. Now, these four Vedas were not passed down in written form. These four Vedas were passed down in oral form. However, the methodology of passing them down was that people had to learn, the disciple had to learn from the guru, the right meter and the right pronunciation. They used to have memories that were so good. They were called Shruti Dharas. Shruti Dhara means someone who could remember something upon hearing it once. In this way, the four Vedas were passed down. And also other Vedic literatures like the Upanishads too. Now the Gita is called what? The Gita Upanishad. It has a very, very special place. It's in the, but it's also in the Mahabharata as in the Bhishma Parva. That means the first section of the battle, etc., where Grandfather Bhishma was the general before Grandfather Bhishma got killed. And that's where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So the Bhagavad Gita has been passed down. What you asked is an interesting question, because if you look at the history of the Mahabharata, there are many different editions of the Mahabharata, because it is an oral tradition rather than a written tradition. However, the Gita, because it has been passed down orally and in a written form, in disciplic succession we have in its original form. Whereas the Mahabharata, there's 80-something different editions of the Mahabharata. In South India, you'll find different aspects of the same story than in the North Indian edition of the Mahabharata. But the Gita we have, like Krishna says in the Gita, another thing Krishna says in the Gita is, evam param vra praptam imam raja shayo vidhu. The knowledge must be passed down in disciplic succession. So the Gita has been passed down. It's been commented on by great acharyas like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Lord Shiva as Shankaracharya commented on the Gita. It has been always commented on in every disciplic succession. Okay? Any other questions or comments? Yes, just a brew.
Emphasis on guru. So how should everyone see that the mood of Arjuna was such that he could hear the Bhagavad Gita, and how should we approach the Bhagavad Gita?
That's a very interesting question. Let's go back into a little bit of epistemology, which epistemology means how do you know what you know, which is mentioned in the Vedic literatures insofar as the imperfections that all of us have. In Prabhupada's introduction to the Isopanishad, he talks about four basic imperfections we have. One of them is imperfect senses, right? Right? And another one is we tend to be an illusion. Another one is what?
Cheating
propensity. What's the last one? Mistakes. So because of these four tendencies, our ability to understand nature, even in the material world, I mean, we see mirages, and we see that there's water somewhere where there's not water, and we certainly have made a lot of mistakes. Our ability to understand things we're quite challenged in that way. So we have to approach someone who is perfect and also presenting the knowledge in a perfect way. And that is guru. And that's what Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, of course, is the guru of Arjuna. Not all of us are fortunate enough to have directly Krishna as spiritual master. But we can have representative. There's four basic disciplic successions which have bona fide gurus. There's the Rudra Sampradaya, Lakshmi Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya. And the statement in the Vedic literatures is, Sampradaya Vinayi Mantras Te Nishpala Mataha. that unless one receives knowledge and mantra in disciplic succession, it's useless. In other words, you can't just read some mantra. Let's say the Gayatri mantra. There's many groups nowadays that chant even out loud the Gayatri mantra, right? And it doesn't work because they haven't received it in disciplic succession. There's a method of receiving something. Although it looks the same, seems the same, it's not connected. The example I sometimes use is that if you have a, what you call in India, I guess, in Great Britain, a PowerPoint, what we call here a plug. You understand? Electric plug, electric PowerPoint. And it's not connected to the powerhouse. It looks the same. But if you plug something into it, it doesn't function in the same way. So people can chant mantras, but the statement is, unless you receive through this chain or through one of the bona fide chains of disciplic succession, it's not effective. So, in the modern day and age, of course, I am a member of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, which means the disciplic succession coming from Lord Brahma, Narada Muni, Vyas, to the present day and age, and then, of course, you have Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada's representatives at this particular point. So I'm connected to Srila Prabhupada. So if one connects, just like if one connects the wire, then one gets the electricity. So that's extremely important. The Vedic literatures emphasize this again and again, that one must be connected in the disciplic succession. Thank you for your question. And of course, that involves connected means that one follows the instructions of the spiritual master or spiritual preceptor, because one can't say, I simply accept someone. Just like in certain religions, they say, if you accept someone, you'll be saved, right? But you don't have to do anything. Sorry, this thing keeps slipping. You don't have to do anything. It's like a criminal saying, I accept the government. But that doesn't do any good. Of course, practically every criminal accepts the government. They're trying to escape it. So accepting that the police exist doesn't help you. You have to follow the law. Like, I mean, let's say I was coming here and I didn't speed. But if I was speeding, they pulled me over and I said to the policeman, I accept you. You know, yeah, I accept you. You exist. I accept you. It just doesn't matter. You were speeding. So accept the spiritual master means to take instructions from the spiritual master, and instructions in one's daily life, but even more important in sadhana, in practice of bhakti. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Or yes, Hrishikesh. Evam yo veti. One who knows one who knows about Krishna. This is, of course, referring to sambandha gyan, which you mentioned. Sambandha means like the nature and relationship of Krishna and his energies. You got that? We were talking about other certain energies, like the time energy, the material energy, the living entities and energy, like that. So one who knows, has sambandha gyan, and has faith in sambandha gyan, and functions according to sambandha gyan, because he has faith, then ajanma karma chamadim evam yoviti tatvata. Chaktva deham, upon giving up this body, punarjanma daiti. He will not come again to this material world. So Krishna is referring to sambandha gyan there. And obviously, if one has faith, the definition of faith is shraddha shabde vishar shakahe sujita nischaya, that if one really has faith, then one will understand that simply doing what Krishna asks, you can accomplish everything. That's the definition. Of course, that's Bengali right there. Sada Shabde Visha Shakahi Sudra Nisya Krishna Bhakta. Okay? Any other questions?
So we have Vedanta Sutras, which is the essence of all the Vedas.
Yeah.
And then we have Bhagavad Gita, again, the essence of all the Vedas. Mm-hmm. So the parallel between these two.
The Vedanta Sutra, okay, let's talk about what the Vedanta Sutra is. The Vedanta Sutra is a commentary on the Upanishads. Like, you can correlate different verses in the Vedanta Sutra with different Upanishads. And the Vedanta Sutra is written in what we would call short, sometimes it says codes, but not like Morse code or anything like that, in short statements. For example, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to look for the absolute truth. Now, if you don't know how to look for it, you won't understand how to apply that statement. So it's understood that those who are studying the Vedanta Sutra will be able to unpack the statements and understand them. Because they're written in very, very short codes like that. I mean, an example sometimes I use in that regard. If I tell you, in a short code, get in your car and drive to Hillsboro. That's a short code. The long code would be, not code, but the long statement would be, take your keys, walk out the door, put on your shoes, pull that little handle, sit down, put your key in. Of course, now they have electronic keys. But put your key in the ignition, turn it to the right, all the way, but let it go after it starts your car. And then put the car, if it's a shift car, in first gear, let up on the clutch, and then I'd be here all day long describing to you how to get to Hillsboro Temple. And I'm not going to do it. So that's a long statement. But a short statement implies that you already know how to do it. You know, you're not a dummy. You've been driving a car for many years. So those who study the Vedanta Sutra are not dummies. But for us, we need a longer explanation. And that longer explanation for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and actually for those who are Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary and starts with the first verse in the Janmadyasya Yataha. The absolute truth is that from which everything comes. Which is a short statement. That's how the Bhagavatam starts. And the Vedanta Sutra also starts in a similar way. The absolute truth is that from which everything comes. But how will you understand that? If I just tell that to you, so the rest of the Bhagavatam explains that particular statement. So that's the Vedanta Sutra's relationship with the Vedic literatures. First of all, you have the original four Vedas. Then after that, you have the Upanishads. And you also have the Vedanta Sutra. In addition, you have the Itihasas, the histories. Histories like Ramayana, Mahabharata. You have the Puranas. The Puranas are, there's 18 major Puranas. Six are for those in the mode of goodness, six are for those in the mode of passion, six are for those in the mode of ignorance. The Puranas are not in the mode of ignorance and passion, but they're meant for particular ones are meant for people who have that particular disease of being in the modes. So those are the Itihasa, and then the Puranas and the, that's Smriti. That's Smriti. But it's interesting because people often say that we're only interested in the original four Vedas. You know, you have this statement sometimes that people say, you know, especially members of the Arya Samaj and other groups like that, they said only the original four Vedas. Well, I got news for you. Guess what it says in the original four Vedas? Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchyate. You know what that? It says, in the original four Vedas, it says the Itihas is the history. So the Puranas are known as the fifth Veda. So even the original four, if we call them original four Vedas, contain information about the Puranas and the histories like Ramayana and Mahabharata. Okay. Anything else before we take prasad? Or have a kirtan or dwarati or whatever? Any other questions? So you're all invited to come to the to our temple on Sunday, which we're going to be talking about. There we're going to be talking about the Gita Mahatmya and all the different interesting stories that Lord Shiva told about the different people who got liberated, went back to God. Amazing stories. People who got liberated, went back to God just by hearing even a half a verse of the Bhagavad Gita. There's so much benefit hearing the Bhagavad Gita, because the Bhagavad Gita is the incarnation of Krishna. It's Krishna's own words. And it was spoken in about 40 minutes to Arjuna. For us, it takes 40 years. But for Arjuna, because he was more intelligent, it took 40 minutes to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Thank you very much. Well, it's late. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. So, what happens now? RT?
And whatever I know or report to know, that's by the mercy of my guru, Srila Prabhupada, because we were blind in the darkness of ignorance, and Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torch light of knowledge, taught me everything I know. And I had read so many versions of the Bhagavad Gita before I came across Prabhupada's Gita. And nothing changed in my life until I read Prabhupada's Gita. Because they weren't connected in the cyclic succession. And, of course, in most cases, the philosophy wasn't presented properly. But as soon as I read Prabhupada's Gita, immediately I dedicated my life to Krishna. It's the only Gita that's made devotees. So, and tomorrow, I mean, on Sunday, we'll have the opportunity to get cases or sponsor cases of Gita. Is that right? Ditching the right... If Aditya Narayan Prabhu was here today, he would have already sold 50 cases. But I'm not empowered by him. Okay, so RT now?
I'm not sure. Did somebody say anything about Bhagavad Gita cases?
Oh. Could we do that now?
Just word, if they chose to.
I'm not a salesperson. I mean, I. Can someone take the lead with that?
Yeah, I can just mention
it. Yeah. I mean, actually, I can mention that one will get so much benefit if they can take part in distributing the Bhagavad Gita right now. Okay. Oh, cartels. Where are the cartels? Thank you for coming. Okay. So, the benefit one gets, of course, reading the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says you're worshiping him with with your intelligence. So, by distributing the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the Gita also, no one is more dear to me than he who teaches this Gita to the people and devotees. So you become extremely dear to Krishna by sponsoring cases of the Gita that will be given out, what, motels?
In the jails, motels, and whoever would like to.
And to people in general, to the young people at the universities.
Yes.
We have big programs to pass out Gitas at the University of North Carolina, North Carolina State, and Duke University. So even if you can't pass out the books yourself, you get the benefit of someone else passing out the books for you. And it's immeasurable. You get so many blessings. It's incredible. And so... You wanna?
Yeah. As you said, Maharaj, I know this. So you have a choice to... You have a choice to actually take a case of Gita. It's about 18 hard books or about 20 small books, 24, right? Yeah. So you have a choice to just take it to yourself, or you want to gift it as to your friends, that's fine. But if you chose to just sponsor 101 for each case, and as temple to just distribute, that's possible too. We thought we'll just mention this because we are getting together with Gita, so I thought I'll just mention that.
And do you want to give the price for one, or what? how do they do it? I mean, you mentioned to do it, but how do they do it, or when can they do it, and when can they get the case of the Gita?
Yeah, just to make it simple, whoever is interested, you can just talk to Subhash Prabhu or me, and then we'll be able to give you more information.
Okay. And if you come to the temple, you can pick up your case of the
Gita,
right?
Or I can bring it.
Or you can
there.
Bring it to the home. I mean, it's very auspicious. Even if one has a Gita in their home, and even if you never read it, you make spiritual advancement. Can you imagine? Because the Gita is the deity. It's the incarnation of Krishna. Okay. So, Bharati now?
I thank Maharaj for presiding over this Gita Jayanti function.
Yeah.
And also Krishna Priya Mataji and Krishna Prabhu. In fact, they left just now. And all the guests, from various, from neighborhood and from distant places. Some people came from Vincent's